Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week, your window on the world of Iowa politics, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin, of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Laura, this is our 118th Capital Week together. Welcome.
Good to be here, Dennis.
So much to talk about on this broadcast, including a late-breaking agreement this Monday afternoon about property tax relief in Iowa and action the state legislature still has to take to finish off its session this week. But we start with our Capital Week Caucus Almanac and another late-breaking story. Yeah, we've got them tonight, that the State House has just passed a bill saying Iowans must be present to take part in next year's state caucuses, but there's flexibility in this thing. Laura, let's download it here.
This is the bill that State Representative Bobby Kaufman introduced a couple of weeks ago and fast-tracked it through the Ways and Means Committee, and then it just sat there, and people were wondering what's going on with this bill. Well, it appeared on the House floor this afternoon with a very significant amendment. So the original bill said that caucuses have to require in-person participation only, and to participate in the caucus, you have to be a registered member of the political party at least 70 days before the caucuses. Some people raised concerns that that might be unconstitutional for the state to regulate internal political party processes. So the way the bill was changed this afternoon before it passed on a mostly party line vote is that the state central committees of both the Iowa Democratic Party and the Republican Party of Iowa will have flexibility in determining rules related to the caucuses, including what the party registration deadline, but in order to have presidential selection at the caucuses, it will have to be in person. And that is designed to mollify New Hampshire so that they don't start to get worried that Iowa is doing mail-in balloting that looks too much like a primary.
That's right. This is a bid by the state Republican Party to fend off that threat by New Hampshire to jump in front of the line to become the first presidential nominating state.
Yes, and the Republicans have complained that what the Democratic Party is planning to do would be too much like a primary. And the Iowa Democratic Party leaders keep saying, we haven't released our delegate selection plan, and that should be coming out within the next few weeks. And so we'll see. But this bill is, like I said, very different. It doesn't raise the same kind of constitutional concerns as the original draft. And I think that that's probably why we saw a delay. They have probably been working on this amendment for a while.
We will have more on this next week. Meanwhile, last week, still on the Caucus Almanac, as expected, President Biden announced he is running for re-election. He is 80 years old. His announcement did not generate a lot of enthusiasm anywhere, actually.
Well, a lot of Americans would prefer for Joe Biden not to seek re-election. And I've been keeping an eye on polls, particularly the polls that ask people who don't really want either Joe Biden or Donald Trump to run and what they think. And I think what the Biden campaign is banking on is that he's still running ahead of Donald Trump in the national polling. But there is, as you mentioned, a fairly noticeable lack of enthusiasm for the re-election campaign.
After Mr. Biden's announcement, Trump called him, quote, the most corrupt president in American history. There is a bit of irony in former President Trump having that quote.
Yes, I mean, Trump is the only president impeached twice. So that is, I mean, but that it is the airing of grievances, which you've mentioned in the past. That is something that Donald Trump continues to bring up regularly.
So Trump is the front runner in the Republican Party for the nomination. Again, he's ahead of Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida. So Mr. Trump announced late this afternoon, another late breaking story, he's going to hold a rally in Des Moines on May 13th, a couple of weeks from now, a Saturday, the same day that Ron DeSantis is scheduled to come to Iowa.
Yes, Ron DeSantis is, again, not officially a declared candidate. He has visited Iowa before, not for a campaign event, and he's going to be at a fundraiser for the member of Congress from Northwest Iowa, Randy Feenstra. And so I thought it was interesting that Donald Trump decided to Bigfoot Ron DeSantis. He'll probably dominate the media coverage. He'll probably draw a bigger crowd than what's going to be at that picnic, and I'm sure that that's by design.
At this point, DeSantis, who has launched some TV ads and he's hired some Iowa people to run the campaign, it's hard, and we've talked about this, it's hard to see a lane right now for Mr. DeSantis. He can't out-Trump Mr. Trump, and Mr. Trump has everything going for him at this point.
I really think so. And you see it in the national level polls as well, that the high point for Ron DeSantis was shortly after last November's election, when there was a perception, there was a lot of media discussion about the fact that Trump-endorsed candidates did poorly in elections for governor and U.S. Senate. And there seemed to be more interest in looking for an alternative. But as time has gone on, DeSantis has been sinking in the polls and Trump has been rising. And whenever I get a chance to talk with Republican Party activists in Iowa, I always ask them, do you think that anyone has a chance of beating Donald Trump here? And I mean, I'm just very skeptical that anyone can put together a coalition. There is still a lot of residual support for Trump. And a lot of people, even if they have some misgivings about a few of the things they did, they really like that he appointed so many judges and Supreme Court justices. And so I just think it's going to be very difficult for anybody to make a case, a compelling case against Donald Trump with that Republican caucus going electorate.
And just briefly to summarize who's in and who's out of the race, and I'll take the easy one, the Democrats. President Biden's in. Robert Kennedy Jr., an anti-vaccine Democrat, the son of former U.S. Senator Robert Kennedy, is in for the Democrats. And author Marianne Williamson, neither one of those appears to pose any threat to President Biden. But there are a ton of people in the race and may jump into the race for the Republicans. Why don't you take those?
Yeah, so we have the declared candidates include the former U.N. ambassador, Nikki Haley, former governor of South Carolina, the former governor of Arkansas, Asa Hutchinson. He's already been here a couple times. He's coming back. The businessman, Vivek Ramaswamy. And by the way, he seems to be really exciting crowds. I have my eye on him because I think he might be a Pete Buttigieg type of a figure who attracts a lot of support. The businessman, Perry Johnson from Michigan, and conservative radio host, Larry Elder. There are more candidates expected to join the race as well.
I notice how quickly you picked up on the fact that Nikki Haley's name was not in the line that said former UN ambassador and governor of South Carolina. Very nice pickup there, Laura. All right. Here's who's out of the Republicans. Former Republican Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says he's not running. Ted Cruz, he's not running. Former Governor Larry Hogan of Maryland, not running. U.S. Senator Marco Rubio of Florida, not running. But again, you still have seven or eight people on the Republican side, all of whom are likely to take away something from themselves, so that Trump, almost same as last time, Trump has the lane to himself. Everybody else splits it.
Yes. I mean, Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina, he was very well received at that Faith and Freedom Coalition event we talked about last week. Former Vice President Mike Pence, he's expected to run. I don't think that he was as well received. I have yet to find an Iowa Republican who's really excited about his campaign. And of course, Ron DeSantis, it looks like he's running. He's hired some fairly heavyweight political operatives, Tyler Campbell, who's worked for the Iowa Secretary of Agriculture, Mike Nag, and Ryan Koopmans, who has been an advisor to Governor Kim Reynolds. But I just don't know. Like I said, it's hard for me to see how somebody could put together a winning coalition against Donald Trump here.
All right. From the Caucus Almanac, we're going to go to Capitol Week's Congressional Almanac very briefly, because Iowa U.S. House Republicans got a win last week in closed-door negotiations with Speaker of the House Kevin McCarthy, and it was a big deal. They were threatening to withhold their vote, but they wound up voting in favor of this debt ceiling bill.
Yes, and you may remember earlier in the year when there was the drama about electing a House Speaker, and Iowa's four Republicans were solidly behind Kevin McCarthy on all of those ballots. And I think that they called in their chit last week, because the bill that is a combination of proposed federal budget cuts and a proposal to extend the debt ceiling, raise the debt ceiling for the next year. It included repealing a lot of things from the Democratic approved Inflation Reduction Act last year. And of course, Republicans all voted against the Inflation Reduction Act. But when it gets down to the particulars, the Iowa Republicans didn't want to see repeal of some of these provisions that promote ethanol, carbon sequestration, which is key for these carbon dioxide pipelines. And so they didn't make any public threats about not voting for the bill, but it seems pretty clear that behind closed doors, they told Kevin McCarthy this has to come out. And it did. Those provisions did come out of the bill on the eve of the vote, and they took a victory lap after the House approved that bill.
And bear in mind, the victory is totally symbolic, because the bill is absolutely DOA in the Senate.
Yeah, not only is it DOA But I saw that in the Senate that Chuck Schumer said today that they're going to be holding hearings in different committees to really drill down into the details of this bill, not because they want to pass it, but because they want to a lot of publicity about the very deep budget cuts in some programs, some of which are very popular, that would happen. So I think that for some of the House Republicans, they had misgivings about voting for this. They wanted to move it forward, but they weren't necessarily behind all of this proposed spending cuts that are in it. And the Senate Democrats are going to make sure that they keep that front and center in the public's attention.
And briefly, 3rd District GOP Congressman Zach Nunn announced a bipartisan effort last week to bolster cybersecurity at schools.
Yes, and there have been some issues, some cyber attacks affecting several school districts in Iowa. And this is an issue that Zach Nunn worked on within the Bush administration. And also when he was in the Iowa legislature, he at least introduced some legislation related to cybersecurity. So it's something that he's been interested in for a while.
And let's talk about E15. The Federal Environmental Protection Agency last week took emergency action to let drivers in Iowa and other states buy gas with 15% ethanol. And it is cheaper than E10. So this is perceived as a big victory for Iowa and other Midwestern states.
Yeah, certainly the renewable fuel groups have been pushing for this. Most ethanol that people can buy at gas stations is that 10% blend. A 15% blend, of course, will increase demand for ethanol and for the corn that is used to make ethanol. I mean, you have to remember that outside of Iowa and a few other states, there aren't really very many gas stations that even sell E15. So I wouldn't exaggerate the impact of this nationally, but it certainly is positive for ethanol producers in Iowa. And in Iowa, there are quite a few gas stations that do sell this fuel.
Let's get on to the state legislature, which had hoped to adjourn last Friday. Well, here's a secret. It did not. There is still plenty left to do this week if they're going to get adjourned. It looked like you were looking at Sammy the dog there. Was that what I was seeing right there?
He's over there, yes.
Samuel the dog is
he's behaving himself, though.
Bellin household there. All right, one of the things they have to do is property tax cuts. But breaking news again this afternoon, agreement has been reached between Democrats and Republicans on a version of the bill that's going to save money for people. This is a big deal.
Yeah, so we had talked about this last week. So the House and the Senate have approved different property tax bills that both had very wide bipartisan support, but they were very different. The approaches were completely different, and it wasn't something where they could easily meet in the middle. And in talking to people last week on what they're going to do, some people felt, well, they might kick it to next year. But I felt that there was just no way they can walk away without doing something on property taxes, because it's been in the news a lot. People's assessments have jumped in some counties by 20% or more, and there is a lot of desire to see something done. So I have not read through the text of the amendment. The amendment was not ready at the time that a Senate subcommittee was meeting on the bill around lunchtime, but it is supposedly ready to go. Both the parties have signed off on it. The Democrats seem to be supportive of it. Governor Kim Reynolds is supportive of it, and it's going to provide about $100 million in property tax relief, with certain provisions that provide extra relief for military families and seniors. And also, I think that the cities, well, I mean, it might depend on which city, but the local governments had a lot of misgivings about the House bill. And this one may give the local governments a little more flexibility than the House bill would have.
We will have more on this Sunday night. One of the big things, the biggest thing they still have to do, having reached agreement here, they have to approve the legislators this week. A new budget. They're going to do that.
Yes. I mean, the budget, property taxes is something that they really wanted to do before they adjourn. But the budget is one of the few things that they actually have to do. I mean, they literally cannot adjourn for the year without approving a budget for the fiscal year that begins on July 1st. So they're working their way through the spending bills. Just, and we talked about this a few weeks ago, but I want to give people a sense of how different the budget process is this year from how it's worked for the last, basically my entire lifetime, that in typically the House and the Senate, they would have these joint budget subcommittees. They would work out targets fairly early in the session. And then the different chambers would work on their bills and they would pass it and send it to the other chamber. And if they didn't like it, they would make a few changes and send it back. But this year, all of the budget bills are being negotiated behind closed doors between House and Senate Republican leaders. So what's happening is that neither chamber has passed most of the bills. In fact, some of the bills we still haven't even seen at all. The education appropriations, the justice system appropriations, the infrastructure appropriations bill. And so these amendments are being revealed shortly before the floor debate. And so you aren't going to have as much bouncing back and forth between the chambers, but it also means that there's a lot less time for the public and for members of the minority party to even understand what's in these bills. So last week, several bills were introduced and passed in the Iowa Senate, but in every case, the amendment was published maybe only a few hours, certainly less than 24 hours before it was debated on the floor.
A couple of other things that are still on the, if you will, this last week, if this is the last week, the House has yet to pass that bill expanding the jobs and hours that Iowa teens can work.
Yes, and I don't know. Democrats have proposed something like 20 amendments to that bill. So it's going to be time consuming for the House to take that up. I'm not sure how much political will there is within the House Republican caucus. That is not really a must-pass bill. That's something that the Restaurant Association wants, the grocery store chains, Hy-Vee, and so on want. But that's not something where they literally can't go home until they finish it. So I would have to say that I think that that child labor bill maybe will be something they'll come back to in 2024. But it's always possible that they could find a way, find a compromise, and move this through really quickly. But that would be a very time-consuming debate if the House were to take up that bill.
And the Senate has yet to pass a bill letting Iowans leave guns in their locked vehicles in the parking lots of schools and public buildings. Doesn't seem as if there's a lot of push for this one at the end.
Well, it's interesting. And you know how I always say, look at the lobbyist declarations. And this is a classic example because the main thrust of this bill is that people would be able to keep firearms in their locked cars, in most public parking lots, on school grounds, and on college campuses. But that's not the only thing that the bill does. And there's a small division of the bill that relates to insurance policies and underwriting of schools. And the insurance lobby groups really don't like that. If you look at the lobbyist declaration, there's the predictable, the gun safety groups are against the bill, the National Rifle Association's for it, their affiliate is for it, there are public health and children's advocacy groups that are against it. But then several different insurance lobby groups or companies like Wellmark are registered against this bill. And that is the impression I'm getting, is that if anything is keeping this off the floor of the Iowa Senate, it is that pushback from the insurance industry. So I am not hearing that there is a lot of interest in running this bill. It's possible that it could happen, but I think that they might take it up again next year, perhaps without the same insurance provisions.
It seems as if we're going to have a lot to talk about next Monday night. Oh gosh, are we? 17 after the hour now. This is KHOI's Capital Week with Laura Bellin and me, Dennis Hart. We are your one-stop source for everything political going on in Iowa. We're here every week at this time to talk about what's been happening in and around the state capitol and what it all means. Well, things did happen last week in the state Senate. For one thing, they passed a bill limiting state auditor Rob Sand's powers. Brother, this is controversial, and Mr. Sand does not like it.
Yes, this is the House version. So the Senate approved this bill in early March, party line vote. It went to the House. The House passed an amendment which didn't really address most of the auditor's concerns and didn't address the concerns of outside groups, including the association that represents CPAs, the National State Auditors Association, and other people who are involved in this. Rob Sand has said that this is a pro-corruption bill that's going to prevent him from independently auditing state agencies. The Republicans say that this is something that they just want to make sure that there is that people's privacy is protected and that government agencies or government entities aren't suing each other. So the crux of it is that the state auditors would only be able to get information from state agencies with the consent of that agency. If they issued a subpoena, they would not be able to go to court to enforce the subpoena. It would go to a three-member arbitration board where the three people were somebody representing the state auditor, somebody representing the entity being audited, and somebody appointed by Governor Reynolds. So Democrats are really upset about this bill. It was, as you said, it was a party line vote in the Senate. In the House, six Republicans joined Democrats to vote against the bill. But when the House amended version went back to the Senate, it was another straight party line vote.
Well, something that was not controversial last week, the Senate unanimously passed a bill requiring school districts to adopt policies to discipline students who are violent or who make threats of violence.
Yes, and we do spend a lot of time talking about the more controversial bills, but in any given week, there always are quite a few bills that pass unanimously or almost unanimously, and this was a good example. So this is something to address a concern that educators have had, as well as parents, that the administrators would, as you say, have to notify parents within 24 hours. The school would also have to notify parents of students who were threatened or hurt in any incident. And the Iowa Department of Education has said that there are more incidents of discipline issues, including violence in schools.
And the Senate Appropriations Committee advanced a bill increasing income eligibility limits for families with kids up to 160% of the federal poverty level.
Yes, well, this is something where the Democrats have been criticizing the Republican majority for a long time for not doing enough to expand child care, which is a major barrier to workforce issues in Iowa. And so this is something that would allow a few more families, an additional, apparently, according to the estimate, the nonpartisan estimate, 1,756 children will qualify for child care assistance. But it's really not a large number compared to the need. And it would increase the eligibility for people to qualify for this child care assistance. But 160% of the federal poverty level still really isn't very much. There are a lot of people who make too much money to qualify for that assistance, and yet they don't make enough money to fully pay for child care. So this is something where, I mean, Democrats, when any number of bills have been debated this year, this is a refrain that we hear a lot from House and Senate Democrats. Why aren't you doing more to address the child care crisis?
And the Senate was indeed busy last week. It passed the Agriculture and Natural Resources Spending Bill with a provision that Democrats hate. They said it could limit the acquisition of public lands.
So we talked about this after the second funnel deadline in March. This was one of the bills that did not get through the House committee before that deadline that would make it would change the policy language to discourage land acquisition and encourage the Iowa Department of Natural Resources to focus their spending on preserving and maintaining the public land that we already have. So that passed the Senate, didn't have enough support in the House to get out of committee. And so now we have this policy language magically appearing at the last minute in an agriculture and natural resources budget bill, which would say it would remove a provision of the code that encourages more acquisition of public lands. Another part of that budget bill that was very controversial was that it takes about $500,000 away from the Iowa Department of Natural Resources that's currently used for a water quality monitoring program that's run through the University of Iowa. And it puts that money over into the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship, but not for water quality monitoring, just for any kind of land practices. And so that has, within the environmental community, there's been a lot of criticism that the state of Iowa is basically saying that we don't want to know. We're not going to be doing the monitoring and we're not going to know what is going on with the water quality and whether any of these land practices are actually making the water cleaner.
Let's move down to the Senate advancing a new traffic camera bill that they said would let local governments use that technology to address real safety concerns. I get the impression that this traffic camera thing, it's been around for a while. Is it the new bottle bill? Is that what we're talking
about? It is something that it's been around, not quite as long as the bottle bill, but it's getting close. And we do usually see more action on it in the Senate. The state Senator Brad Zahn, who's a Republican, who's served in the Senate for now almost 20 years. This is an issue that's near and dear to his heart because his son was driving one of his family's cars and got a speeding ticket in Cedar Rapids from one of these traffic cameras. And the speeding ticket was assessed to Brad Zahn because he was the owner of the car, even though he wasn't driving the vehicle. So it's just something, this happened a long time ago, but it's something that where he has always been one of the leading people wanting to regulate this and not allow local governments to use these traffic cameras mainly to generate revenue. Of course, local governments and law enforcement have said that the legislature shouldn't interfere and shouldn't get involved in what they say are real safety concerns in where they're placing these cameras. So I don't know. I have not heard that there's a lot of appetite in the House to pass this bill, but it could be that there are bills that the House wants that the Senate hasn't brought to the floor yet. And there could be some kind of trade in the works where the House agrees to move a traffic camera bill in exchange for something else. But my guess is that we don't see this headed to the governor's desk.
A couple of more quickies before we get to koozies. Yes, koozies. The Senate Ethics Committee voted to table one ethics complaint against a state senator pending some more information and dismissed an unrelated complaint against another senator. So two senators in the crosshairs here.
Yes, in the time that I've been covering the Iowa legislature, I have never seen an ethics complaint against an Iowa lawmaker go anywhere. These ethics rules are very narrow. It has to be something that has happened within the last 3 years, and it has to be directly related to the person's conduct. And these didn't quite rise to that level. Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement had filed a complaint against State Senator Mike Bussolo because he didn't allow a hearing on that pipelines bill, the eminent domain regulation bill. And they said that he had a conflict of interest because he formerly worked for Bruce Rastetter's company, and he also formerly worked for Governor Terry Branstad. And both Rastetter and Branstad are very involved with that Summit Carbon Solutions pipeline proposal. So the issue, though, is that the way the ethics rules are written in the Iowa Senate, you can't do something that you have a direct financial interest in. But if it's helping somebody who you used to work for, but you're not being paid for right now, that doesn't really rise to that level. So they didn't dismiss the complaint, but they tabled it. They said they would need more concrete information to move forward. The other ethics complaint against Democratic State Senator Molly Donahue, they did dismiss. This was something where she had complained. She had posted on social media that Moms for Liberty, she had said that they were a hate group and other disparaging, apparently, things about them. And people complained. But the ethics rules aren't written so that the legislature can bring the hammer down on people for what they post on social media. That's just really not the way it works.
Want to make sure we get to this one, so let's do it next here. You wrote on Bleeding Heartland yesterday, Sunday, the governor's office is hiding the ball on its own spending. What do you mean?
Well, this post was more than 6 months in the works, and I've been keeping a close eye on the governor's office budget for a number of years now. And it is very difficult to figure out exactly how much is being spent on the governor's staff salaries and how all of that is being paid for. And the reason why I just published this over the weekend is because finally last week, when the Senate unveiled and approved an administration and regulation budget that included the governor's office, they did add an extra $500,000 appropriation, which the governor had requested. That is more than a 20% increase. It brings the governor's office budget appropriation up to about $2.8 million, and that's when most state agencies are getting status quo budgets. So, but I've been looking into this since last September because every year the governor's office budget allocation has been about $2.3 million since 4 years ago. And yet every year the governor's office spends quite a bit more than that. They manage to offload a lot of the expenses onto other state agencies. So a lot of my reporting was about how difficult it is, even through public records requests to different agencies and the governor's office, trying to find out exactly how much is being spent is a challenge. But there was an eyebrow-raising moment during the Senate debate last week when the Democratic State Senator Janet Peterson, who's the ranking member on appropriations, asked the Appropriations Committee Chair Tim Kreinbrink, what is the governor's office going to do with this extra $500,000 appropriation? And Senator Kreinbrink said he didn't know. So that was rather surprising that they would be increasing the governor's office budget by that much without having a concrete idea of where the money is going to be going.
We cannot end this broadcast on this Monday night without talking about Governor Reynolds promoting real women koozies parodying Bud Light. If you haven't heard this story, where have you been? It's all over the media. It's involving Governor Sanders, and yes, Governor Sanders, Governor Reynolds, who's going to be, yes, on a koozie along with three other Republican governors.
Yes, this was a fundraiser for Arkansas Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who has worked closely with Governor Reynolds. And when you say, I mean, this is definitely not something that's been in hiding. The governor posted this on her own social media, not her official governor's account, but her political account, a picture of this real woman koozie. This is a controversy over something that I certainly had never heard of, an influencer, a transgender influencer I had never heard of that Bud Light had some kind of a deal with that was related to a TikTok video. And the people, some of the conservative influential commentators who have been emphasizing a lot of issues related to transgender rights, I mean, they were very unhappy. And so they've been calling for Bud Light boycott. So this is, it was, I think, perhaps initially intended to be in a lighthearted way, but the way Governor Reynolds posted about it on her social media, she said, woke companies are trying to change who we are. And a picture of this can that, and then with a koozie that says real woman. And of course, in the LGBTQ community, that was considered highly offensive because the governor is essentially saying that transgender women are not real women.
Right. And there's a background music track on a video that they put out on this one saying real women don't have to fake it. Well, we're not faking it, Laura. We're out of time. It's been one of those shows. Very quickly, you're going to be looking at the end of the session this week.
Yes, there are a lot of bills. I'm waiting to see whether the midwife licensing bill comes up, whether there's a bill regulating stormwater regulations. So there's just all kinds of things that I have my eye on this week, in addition to the big budget bills and the property tax bill.
We'll be back next Monday night. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura and I will be here next Monday night at 7. We will not be faking it. We'll actually be here, and we'll talk about everything interesting, important, or entertaining about politics, Iowa style. Thanks so much for the privilege of your time tonight. We appreciate it. We value it. Between now and next time, hey, we hope you have a safe, healthy, and happy week.